From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, encounters with star people. Ooh, get ready for that. By the way, back from Asheville, North Carolina, where we had our live stage show event, and it was fabulous. We had a great time. People of Asheville. I was going to say just the people of Asheville are amazing, but people were coming in from all over the place. Washington, D.C., New Jersey, New York, Chicago, Tampa, Florida, all over the place. Special thanks, though, to Micah Hanks as a guest and for directing the band that had to put up with my singing. Bill Forstgen, as we talked about EMPs and solar flares, and Joshua P. Warren, who talked about the paranormal, and all the folks in attendance as well. Thank you. Asheville was a great time, and I've got the two events coming up for the rest of the year, just events. They are in New Orleans and an Ancient Alien Conference in California. We'll be posting that on the coasttocoastam.com website in the not-too-distant future. But next year, we're going to be planning more live stage show events, so just stay tuned to our website. We're going to be all over the country next year and very close to, I'm sure, where you are. Here's what's happening. The FBI has uncovered evidence that foreign hackers penetrated two state election databases in recent weeks. They've not released those states, the names of the states, prompting the Bureau to warn election officials around the country to take new steps to enhance the security of their computer systems, according to federal and state law enforcement officials, something that Bev Harris has been saying on our program as well. And when the Obama administration announced its plan to give up U.S. protection of the Internet, it promised that the United Nations would never take control. But U.N. control is the likely result if the U.S. gives up Internet stewardship as planned at midnight on September 30th. Now, what the heck does this all mean? Let's check in with the expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, The UN alarm has been something that the Wall Street Journal in particular has been running up the flagpole a lot. They did it in an editorial again, I guess, this morning. It really doesn't match up with reality, but the reality is complicated. And if you really want to get into it, it's acronym soup. But here it is in a nutshell, what's actually happening, because I've seen it all along. Back in 1998... goes all the way back to 1998, when the domain name system organization was being worked out. The Department of Commerce, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, NTIA, which is in the Department of Commerce, made a temporary arrangement with ICANN, which was the Internet Corporation. we're getting just one after another here, right?
Yeah, they keep coming.
I won't even try to expand these anymore. But ICANN was the organization that most people who work with a domain name system know about, because they're the ones that are involved in assigning the top-level domain names, so like .com, .org, .lunatic, you know, the whole...
Yeah.
There's gobs of them now. A lot of people have been very critical of ICANN, including me. I think they've made some good decisions. They've made a bunch of bad decisions. I've been opposed to the massive expansion in domain names, because I think most of them have just turned into spam and phishing traps and used for criminal activity. Not all, but most. But here's the bottom line on all of this. The plan to do a transition from the Department of Commerce control, actually it was a contract with ICANN, starting all the way back. This plan has been in the works for many, many, many years. And the reason it's been in the works is that the current model was completely U.S.-centric, and it doesn't work anymore in a global environment with a global Internet. Because unless you have a mechanism for what we call multi-stakeholders to have their input on these decisions, what you're going to end up with is foreign countries saying, well, we're not even going to follow the Internet standards. We're just going to use our own names and our own numbers. We're just going to go our own way, and then you don't have an Internet anymore. You just have a little islands scattered all over the world
place.
Talk to each other.
Well, so are you saying this is a good idea for the UN to take total control of this?
The UN is not taking control, and this is where it's gotten kind of botched up in the public discourse here. When the rules were set for this transition, which basically involves how ICANN is controlled, it was specifically built into the plan that the UN, the ITU, domestic governments, those kinds of organizations can't get control. And you can't really say, well, is there any chance at all they could somewhere down the line? He says, you can't say 100%, but it was specifically written up and drawn up in a way to try to prevent that from happening. So what we're faced with here is a situation where the existing system just wasn't going to work anymore. It was going to cause the internet to fragment like a mirror hitting the ground. And what we've got here in this agreement that's been worked on for so many years is imperfect. I would have done it a very much different way, but I didn't get asked. and it's been designed specifically to try to avoid those worst case scenarios, because believe me, nobody except the UN and the ITU and countries like Russia perhaps and China want the UN or the ITU to get control of the internet in terms of what we're talking about here in terms of ICANN. But remember, the internet is a network of networks. You can't really control the whole thing from any
sense. So we're okay here in the United States with the internet when this flip occurs the end of September?
Users aren't going to see, are really not going to see anything. There's not going to be any impact at all. Much of this is truly political. And I think what we're looking at here is as I was saying, it's not the best possible situation. It's not a doomsday scenario. For now, it'll keep the internet from fragmenting, and we'll have time going forward to fine tune it and maybe even find better ways.
Let's definitely talk about this, Lauren, after the 30th of September and see how smoothly things are going. Okay, thank you. Police in China say they have captured a serial killer who murdered 11 women and girls over a 14-year period. The 52-year-old man was arrested at the grocery store that he runs with his wife. He confessed to the murders. Gene Wilder, star of Willy Wonka and several Mel Brooks comedies, is dead at the age of 83. Wilder's nephew said the comedy legend died late Sunday in Stamford, Connecticut, from complications from Alzheimer's disease. The frizzy-haired actor was a master at playing panicked characters in the Mel Brooks classics like Young Frankenstein and The Producers, but he was also knew how to keep his cool as the boozy sheriff in Blazing Saddles and as the candy man in the children's favorite Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
He's going to be missed. Wilder was married to fellow comedian Gilda Radner, an original Saturday Night Live cast member and star in her own right from 84 to 1989, and she died of cancer. An actor returning from an audition dressed as a masked hero Zorro, complete with a plastic sword, shut down the LAX airport and sparked fear of an active shooter situation on Sunday night. The unidentified middle-aged man dressed in all black in a costume with gloves, hat, large belt was apprehended on a bench as he waited for a ride home. Police were initially responding to claims that a man had opened fire near a baggage area. Now, I landed from Asheville in St. Louis. Executive producer Tom Danheiser landed at LAX right before this episode. Tom, that was a close call.
George, nobody wants to be around something like this. I had just left, and they had stopped this guy in the Zorro costume. They had reports that he had a sword. The sword turned out to be wooden. But shortly after that, they started receiving 9/11 calls about a shooting threat, and that created chaos. Passengers breached security doors. They went out on the tarmac. Now, fortunately, the report turned out to be false, which is good. But get this, George, it caused 281 delays, two cancellations, and 27 flight diversions. So all in all, it took about 90 minutes to clear the terminals and get everybody to re-enter the airport.
Were you able to get out of the mess before it happened?
Yes, I had just literally driven out of LAX. If my bag had come like 5 minutes later on the little turnstile thing, I would have been in that whole mess.
Okay, great. Tom, thanks. I'm glad you're safe and everybody else at LAX. A U.S. Postal Service employee stashed nearly 50,000 pieces of undelivered mail in her California home, according to a criminal information filed against the worker. The federal investigators said that she hid nearly 48,288 pieces of United States mail in her apartment. The mail was intended for delivery to customers along the Orange County area, and she just did it. Unbelievable there. And more than 300 wild reindeer have been killed by lightning in central Norway in what wildlife officials are calling a very unusually large natural disaster, I guess so. Up next, we're going to talk about the best democracy money can buy, an incredible story of just what is going on in this country. Greg Palast joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, you're going to hear something over the next 2 hours that you may not like what you hear, but we're going to talk about it anyway because it's very important. Greg Palast is the author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. That's a New York Times bestseller. Spent 6 months on that list. He has produced and starred in the hit BBC documentary Bush Family Fortunes. His undercover reports appear regularly in Harper's Magazine, on the BBC's Newsnight, and on Pacifica's Democracy Now! Palast has won numerous awards, and I mean numerous awards, for investigative journalism, including six Project Censored awards. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. He was on with our colleague a couple of years ago, Richard Serrett. Greg, there aren't many investigative reporters like you around anymore, my friend.
Yeah, I hope they're not putting something in our cereal so we can't reproduce. But the there's very few. In fact, there's so few that I had to go to Britain to work for BBC and The Guardian to report back to the United States about my own country. Now I've just been brought back by Rolling Stone. So for you aging rockers, you'll
Super.
Catch me.
And you're in our Los Angeles studio while I'm here in the St. Louis studio.
Yeah,
so I'm glad you're there.
I'll steal a couple of your ashtrays, too. Of course, you don't smoke.
So. I don't smoke, but they're there to throw stuff away.
Okay.
Is it the internet that is doing this in terms of investigative reporters going by the wayside these days?
No, I think the opposite. If it weren't for the internet, I couldn't get my reports in from Britain and the rest of the world about America. It would be hard to get my stories out at all because you've got the mainstream press, the New York Times and the Washington Pravda, New York Izvestia, etc., which really don't want to give you the full story. So the internet has actually saved investigative reporting. A lot of great investigative reporters have shifted to the net, so we don't have so we're not censored.
But it has affected the newspaper's subscriptions and advertising,
yes,
hasn't it?
It has. But look, the truth is they use that. The newspapers are using the excuse that they don't have the money anymore for investigative reporting. Well, what's left? Non-investigative reporting? Blindfolded reporting? What are they doing? What are they spending their money on? I think that it's mainly fear of annoying the big giant operators that are controlling and owning their companies. Remember, these are multi-level marketing operations. They have TV, they have radio, they have net and web. And they're international, so they got to do things which not only please American billionaires, but the Chinese Politburo at the same time. It's pretty darn hard. The Guardian newspaper, for example, is a not-for-profit newspaper, and BBC is, of course, even though it seems like it's government, it's actually subscriber-funded. So that's the only way I can get through if I don't have a billionaire X-ing out my words.
So we're going to talk about the election.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about parties and what they do to win. I want mm-hmm. folks who are listening to understand we're not picking on any particular candidate. We're talking about the entire system that may include all these candidates.
That's right.
Now tell me how you got started looking into this, Greg.
Okay, yeah. In fact, that's interesting because one thing that I'm very good at annoying all parties and all candidates, even the Green Party. Ralph Nader is really angry at me. How about that? It's true. But anyway, I got started back in London in 2000 when George Bush was running against Al Gore. And I found out that using computers that the Jeb Bush, and who is, what a coincidence, his brother's running for president, Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, and his Secretary of State, Catherine Harris, removed thousands and thousands of people from the voter rolls. Now, most of these were African-Americans, black men, who they said had committed crimes or felons who, if you're convicted of a felon in Florida, You can't vote anymore.
You can't vote. That's right.
And so they said these are criminals. And then, but no one actually got the list. I got my hands on the list. That's what I do as an investigative reporter. I just get those lists.
You keep digging.
I don't break laws, but I get the list, believe me. And when I got the lists, I went through the lists and the names and found out that, hey, it looked like very few of these guys were felons. Then I found out that exactly zero were felons. There were 56,000 people on the first list, and they were looking at maybe six were actually guilty of some crime at some point in their life, but it turned out it was zero. And because those thousands of black men couldn't vote, that gave George Bush the 537 vote margin he needed to become president.
That did it. That's right.
That did it. And, you know, like I say, this is not about one party or another. This is about just, you know, cheating.
but this, Greg, has been going on since the beginning of elections. I mean, yeah. John F. Kennedy and his dad bought West Virginia. They paid off most of the sheriffs.
I saw the receipts.
So I mean, and you know, we know about Chicago and what Richard Daley at the time did.
Well, it goes back to that. I mean, you can go back to the founding of the Republic. You know, I mean, I dig Thomas Jefferson, but if it weren't for the manipulation of the vote, he wouldn't have been a president either. So, you know, it goes way back. And not counting votes is actually, you know, this goes back to Caesar being elected, you know. I don't want to say that it's all doesn't matter, it's all the same, but you know, it's a long history. And what I do as an investigative reporter is dig out the bad stuff.
And now something new has happened,
as
evident with the story I just had before you came on, mm-hmm. where the feds are concerned about hackers getting into our voting system.
That's correct.
This is a very real, serious problem.
Yeah, you've had Bev Harris on, as mm-hmm. You've noted. And look, we don't have secure systems. The idea of turning our votes into electrons and hoping that the people that are reading it are doing it fairly that's faith-based voting. It's very disconcerting. Now, it's hard to find out if something's wrong because of the nature of that beast. Some places, you know, if you want electronic voting, they also print out ballots which go in a separate box. And it's funny, I was talking to these Swiss ballot companies, and they said, well, we have a foolproof ballot that can't be messed with. And so would you help endorse that? Because a lot of people know Greg Palast, that do a lot of, you know, good government stuff. And I said, they don't want a ballot that can't be mucked with. Forget it. You're not going to sell any of these. Where did you come from? You know, like maybe, you know, like my partner, investigations partners from Switzerland, and they count all the ballots. They sit there in rooms literally with pieces of paper and everyone's looking. And so they're not used to the U.S. system where, hey, you know, we just saw Hillary pull this off in, just so you know, I was in California, and I got banged by the Washington Post, which loves me when I go after Republicans.
Hates you when you go after
and
Democrats.
And then there I went, and I said, well, you know, there's a problem here. They declared Hillary Clinton the winner of the California primary on the night of June 6th. It said 100% of precincts reporting, and yet the Secretary of State's office, this isn't Greg Palast getting the word from a black helicopter. This is the Secretary of State's office, said that 2.4 million votes had yet to be counted. And a month later, it was 1 million votes yet to be counted. And by the way, we are months later. The election's over. They still haven't counted all the ballots in California. A very complex system. And most of the uncounted ballots belong to Bernie Sanders. Oh, not all of them, God. But most of them. And because it was independent voters who get a special ballot, which is very nice. So they know who you are and how you vote, right? You get a specially marked ballot. And 3-1, those were Bernie Sanders voters in the Democratic primary. The regular Democrats, which those votes went 2-1 for Hillary. So if they could keep the independent voters' ballots from being counted, hey, they did tricks like you had to get a special ballot. Independents in California, I'm just showing how this system works. It's really crazy. You get independent voters in California are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary, but they have to get a special ballot that says crossover voter. And the elections officials would give them the wrong ballot. People would fill it out. They give them a regular Democratic Party ballot. And then they say later, oh, they weren't supposed to get that ballot, and they throw it out. 66,000 ballots in Los Angeles alone were about to be thrown out, the rest of the state, California, you're talking a couple hundred thousand ballots thrown in the garbage
can. That's enough to shift the election.
Yeah, and so it looked like, I can't say exactly because I can't look at every vote, but from the demographics, it looks like Sanders eked out a victory which was denied him.
Wow. Greg, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk about more of what you've been working on, and the next hour we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Dorey with you along with Greg DePalast, and we are talking about what you're just hearing, elections and what's going on. Greg, you just wrote a big story for Rolling Stone. Tell
That's
us
right.
about that.
Well, as you know, I just, before the break, I annoyed all the Hillary supporters, so now get ready, Trump people. It's your turn. In Rolling Stone, I discovered that, when Trump said that the election's rigged, that people are voting many, many times. What I found out is that, well, he knows it's rigged because his buddies are helping rig it. Both parties are making their best attempt. The way that the Republicans are trying it is that they've created something called interstate cross-check. And what's happened is that the 30 Republican secretaries of state who run our elections sent their entire voter files to one of their members, a guy, Chris Kobach in Kansas. And he put all those voter files together from around the nation and to hunt for people who are voting twice. Now, voting twice is a go-to-jail crime. You vote in two states in a single election, you go to jail. You should go to jail. Goodbye, 5 years. But so he's looking for these double voters, and he came up with a list of suspects, which has 7 million names on it, 7.2 million names on it. That's a lot of suspects for people voting twice. Okay, so who are these people voting twice? I called all of the government offices, 28 states, and our investigators are on it. We can't give you the names. They're criminal suspects, and so we can't tell you who they are. Is it 7 million Americans are suspected of committing this crime of voting twice? I mean, that's pretty severe.
Jeez.
So I used my good old investigative techniques, again, legal, but interesting. Can't give them all away. And we were able to get a couple of states to give us their lists in error. They made a mistake, and maybe I'll give them back. But at the moment, I've gone through the list. They're about, I have close to 2 million of the names. And so I went through them. And
you went through 2 million names?
Actually, I went through 2 million names. Of course, I got a little help from computers and experts in statistics.
Okay.
And we actually went through the 2 million names. Yes, we did, each name. And we found that the people who are supposed to have voted twice in two different states are, and this is an example, and it's a very, very typical example, Maria Cristina Hernandez of Virginia is supposed to be the same exact voter voting a second time as Maria Isabel Hernandez. Now, maybe, George, in your neighborhood, if someone has a different middle name, they ain't the same person.
You would think.
Yeah, you would think, if you're thinking. But that's why they didn't want me to have the names, because they knew that this was a phony. And so what they're doing is slowly, not the full 7 million, but 41,000 in Virginia so far, and God knows how many elsewhere, but we may get up to 1 million by November, where people will show up to vote.
And they won't be allowed to vote.
Their names will be missing. And they won't be told why their names are missing. The Democrats, Bernie people saw this in California. You're not on the voter rolls. Why? We don't know.
So they'll be turned away at the voting booth.
Or, here's a new one. You'll love this. People will get something called, if your name's not on the voter rolls, they say, don't get upset, don't pound the table, don't scream and holler. You can vote. You fill out something called a provisional ballot. Or as I call them, placebo ballots, because you fill them out and you feel like you voted, but you haven't, because you don't have to count the provisional ballot. If someone says they're not counting it, you're not counting it. And so about 3 million people in 2012 got provisional ballots, and they were never counted.
Now, why do you say this is a Republican thing and not both parties?
Well, like I said, I talked about how the Democrats were swiping votes with both hands. The way that the Republicans do it is that, let's put it bluntly, there ain't enough white guys to elect Donald Trump or Republican Senate. And so this is targeting minority voters. How do they do it? It's dumb, simple, George. If you use the only match between the names, like I said, Maria Isabel Hernandez, supposed to be the same voter is Maria Cristina Hernandez. If you just use the first and last names, common names, any statistician will tell you, and the U.S. Census Bureau gives us the detail for every single last surname in America has a racial breakdown at the Census Bureau, which I obtained legally. And what you can do is you look at the last names and the first names, and you know their ethnic background. Now, of course, it's not too difficult to figure out that a Ricardo Garcia is Hispanic.
Is Hispanic.
And no and 97% of the people with the last name Kim are Asian American.
Are Asian, that's right.
And so now it's not that they're not racist, the guys that are doing this. They're not racist at all. What they're concerned with is that these are folks who are not exactly Republicans. Asians, Asian Americans, like Korean Americans and others, vote almost like they've turned black lately. They used to be Republicans. Now it's last election, and they were voting 75% Democratic. And it's looking like they might vote over 80% Democratic. So they, you know, in all's fair in love, war, and elections, and it's decided if you can knock off your opponent's voters, you do so.
Knock off 50,000 votes just to be on the safe side.
Bingo, bango. And it's happening mainly in those Republican-controlled states that are swing states like Ohio and North Carolina.
Well, who's behind this, Greg? Who's doing this? Because I got to tell you, just on the face of it, I don't think Donald Trump is sinister enough to try to pull something like this off. There's got to be some puppet master somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Let's go above and below him. Below him, there's these guys like these functionaries, like this guy, Chris Kobach, who's really known as a kind of real hitman in the election area. There's characters like that. And by the way, some Democrats are using this system, too, like Governor Cuomo of New York, because he has a real fight with minority voters. And so he is trying to use this system to knock off minority voters, even though he's a Democrat, because
it works.
The minority voters don't like Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, even though he's a Democrat. So, you know, it's you're trying to get rid of the voters that don't like you.
Right.
And this is an easy way to get rid of ethnic voters. Now, above Donald Trump, now here's the interesting one. Donald Trump, I know some people aren't going to like this one either because I'm an investigator. Donald Trump plays.
By the way, let me ask you, let's be above board here.
Yeah.
Are you voting for any of these candidates?
Not one.
All right.
And I'm always accused of like favoring one or the other. It depends who I'm attacking. They assume I'm on the other side.
That's why I don't vote for them either.
Yeah. I mean,
I want to stay as impartial as I can.
Well, I have to, because also if you fall in love with, you know, when you're a newsman, you fall in love with a candidate, then you find out that they're rotten once you start looking into them.
Well, you also become biased whether you want to be.
Yeah. And I don't want that stuff. And so I don't want to be close to any of these people. So like in the case of Donald Trump, he plays a billionaire on television. But there's no real strong evidence that he is a billionaire. He's not a poor guy.
He doesn't have $1 billion in the bank.
Yeah, because he has these big buildings, but they're all hocked up to the eyeballs. So he needs real billionaires behind him to put up the cash. So I've been looking at those guys.
All right.
And one of them, for example, the lead guy is, there's a guy from Goldman Sachs named Mnuchin, and he's in charge of gathering. He's a billionaire who used to be Goldman Sachs. Now he's a kind of hedge fund guy. And now that's interesting because Trump, remember, has said that hedge fund guys are just gamblers. They don't create a single job.
Right.
You know, whatever you think of Trump, he makes buildings and people work at casinos and people work at hotels and golf courses. You know, it does create jobs, whether you like, you know, agree with him or not. He does create jobs, but the hedge fund guys don't. And so he says we should tax them. They don't do a damn thing, and they don't add anything to the economy, and they don't pay taxes, and they're just gamblers and something real lucky. So what's he doing turning to them? Because just like Willie Sutton robbing banks, it's where the money is. The hedge fund guys have it. And so Mnuchin got a hold of a guy named JP, as he's known, John Paulson, not Hank Paulson, who is the Secretary of Treasury.
That was Goldman Sachs.
That was Goldman Sachs. This is a guy who hired Goldman Sachs. He's a lot. He made working a scam, and I mean a scam, and they got fined $500 million for it, Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs worked a scam, and this guy made 5 billion dollars helping crash the mortgage market.
Goldman Sachs personally,
$5 billion personally. His company made $14 billion, but he personally more money than anyone since the Pharaoh. No,
are these the guys who sold short?
Yes, but in his case, it's, you know, if you saw The Big Short,
yeah,
those are small fry who made hundreds of millions of dollars. This is the big fryer.
Wow.
Okay, this is, those guys just went along for the ride. They figured out, they sniffed something going on, they grabbed on. But this guy actually helped crash the mortgage market. That's why Goldman Sachs was fined $500 million. Because what he did was he pretended he was buying up mortgages and being on betting that mortgages would rise in value.
While he was
secretly
selling.
He was secretly on the other side of the deal. So Goldman Sachs got fined $500 million, and his assistant, who translated the stuff into French for the sucker banks in Europe, his assistant got nailed. But the billionaire didn't, because, oh, guess what? He hired Harvey Pitt, who was the chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission. And the guy who had just been chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission wrote up the charges against Goldman and the assistant and left out his own client.
So these people are raising money for Mr. Trump?
Yeah. So I actually went, they had a big chow down where you could be a host of the chow down for a $375,000. That's a third of $1 million to ante up for breakfast, literally, at the place called Cipriani's, which is this fancy, fancy place inside the stock exchange. And I got in there.
How'd you get in?
Well, it says, well, it's easy. If it says security door, do not enter.
You open
prohibited.
The door.
Well, in that case, that was a simple one. I just had a cameraman with me who said, we were filming a wedding inside.
And they believed you?
Hey.
All right. So in you go.
In I go. But so we get these guys, and then I went to $1,000 plate dinner the guy had in the Hamptons. By the way, this is all in my film. I have a film out of my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. It's coming out next month in San Francisco. It opens on September 5. It'll be in New York, Los Angeles, all over the place. And you can get the information on where. I'm sorry, I'm going to give you a commercial. It's not, I don't make a profit off. It's a nonprofit operation. GregPallast.com, and you can find out where the film is. So you actually see me going into Cipriani, into the back of the stock exchange. You see me take a powerboat. I have this like James Bond looking boat, and I have my Bond girl assistant. So she looks the part really well, and she looks like she should be at a billionaire's dinner. And we show up at this gathering where it costs $1,000 a plate.
Is this on YouTube a little bit, a little trailer?
I'm going to put a little, yes. If you go to gregpalace.com or you go to my YouTube channel, you'll see a little trailer and some little information. But we actually sneak in and I confront this billionaire.
All right. Well, here's a question for you, Gregory. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with any of the candidates getting billionaires to help fund their campaign?
Let me count the ways, George.
Yes, sir.
Okay. For both, let me give you a little of each candidate. Okay.
We're going to get into the foundation for Hillary later.
Oh, boy. Yeah. There's a show itself. Okay. In the case of Trump, why do the hedge fund guys, whom he has slandered, whom he has just savaged and said, these
vilified.
Guys are bums, you know, just taking advantage of everyone, and then they don't pay taxes. And he says, I'm going to tax them. There's a special billionaires hedge fund loophole called carried interest. This is worth, over the next 10 years, $170 billion to these guys. Now, Trump said he was actually going to close that loophole. So did Bernie Sanders. And then Hillary said, oh, me too. But, you know, after the other
two. Nobody will.
Right. And so, wait. So Trump, he will. But, of course, how do you get your guys? That's their number one concern, is keeping their tax loophole. So he said, I'm definitely going to close that tax loophole. He just said that 2 weeks ago. I don't care who's supporting me. Then quietly, he changed his tax plan to give them a new loophole, which is even bigger.
Oh, no.
So Trump, you know, look, Trump himself said it. When the billionaires give you their money, they expect something in return. He says, I did it. I gave everyone money. I gave Hillary money. I gave the Republicans money. I expect something in return. He knows when these guys put up, you know, he wrote The Art of the Deal. He knows the game. He knows what it costs to run the campaign. He's now in the time where he can't pay for it all, and he's got to pay these guys back, and he knows it. Now, Hillary has her commercial banks. Now, the hedge funds, a lot of them are lining up with Trump, these billionaires. But the why are the commercial banks like Citibank and Chase behind her? Because she says, "Oh, I'm as going to be as tough as Bernie Sanders." Really? Okay. They know that. Well, first of all, there's a kind of a battle between the hedge fund guys and the commercial banks over these big international bond workouts. When Greece went bankrupt, Argentina went bankrupt. There's a war over the spoils in these bankruptcies, international bankruptcies, and in Detroit. Okay. So the big commercial banks are at war over the spoils with the hedge fund guys, and the hedge fund guys are now eating the commercial bank's lunch. Hillary is going to protect the commercial banks. When there's a guy who won't give any money to Trump, won't give any money to Hillary, but he's giving money to Republican Senate campaigns. Mm-hmm. His name is the Vulture. He doesn't like Trump. He says Trump will lead us into a depression. He doesn't like him.
Who do you think is going to win between the two right now?
The billionaires. I mean, look, what do you want me to tell you?
So you're saying it doesn't matter?
Well, no, it does. I'm not one of those guys. You know, there's all these social issues and stuff, and you have to kind of choose, and that's very, I think that's important. And, you know, there's social safety net issues and all that. So you have to decide where you sit personally. But in the big, big money issues, which is where it comes down, you've got, you know, Trump looks like he's maybe toast here, but...
I don't know. He's coming back a little.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Ohio, and I can tell you that people who are, like, Sanders supporters, they won't go to Hillary. They'll go for Trump or mm-hmm. Gary Johnson, Jill Stein. They just can't bring themselves to vote for Hillary because they lost their jobs in the whole free trade disaster.
See, Gary Johnson, the libertarian, could hurt Trump.
Yeah.
If he gets 5 to 10%, that's going to hurt.
He's working 11, 12% in Ohio, which is the big swing state.
That's huge.
And so, but that's why when I talked about that steal that the Republican hitmen were doing on the minority voters, that's going to affect the Senate races in Ohio, North Carolina, Arizona, New Hampshire. And that's what they're aiming for. So, like, there's a billionaire called Paul the Vulture Singer. Now, I didn't name him the Vulture. I don't think his mother did, but she calls him the Vulture. And you don't get the name the Vulture.
Now, how did he make his money?
Well, as you can imagine, when you get the name Vulture, he actually is called, that's his job. He's called a Vulture Financier, and he's the biggest of them all. He's a multi-billionaire.
Nobody knows the guy.
I know. But guess what? He's the number one donor to the Republican Senate campaign. Now, on the other hand, he's also the number one donor for gay marriage rights because his son's married to a man.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's
okay. All right. So in other words, these guys have no politics. They just want their next billion. They don't care what party. It just doesn't matter. And so Paul the Vulture Singer, the way he makes his money, okay, he buys up old debts. For example, he bought up the old auto parts division of General Motors, you know, Delco batteries,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They changed it to Delphi and they sold it off and he secretly bought it up.
Hold on. We're going to come right back. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be back.